Welcome to Keep Making Movies, the podcast where we explore, shall we say, movies that may have needed a bigger budget. We evaluate the movie for what it is, decide if it could have been improved with a budget, and if it'll join our Keep Making Movies official recommend list. I'm your host, KJ, and with me is...
Tom.
Today, we are discussing Junta Yamaguchi's River. This is Junta Yamaguchi's fifth feature-length film since his first movie from 2020, Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. In River, we follow the workers and guests of a ryokan, kind of a fancy hotel, in a Japanese resort town, specifically Kibune, who find themselves stuck in a 2-minute loop. That is, every 2 minutes, the world returns to where it was 2 minutes ago, but the people in the loop are aware of each iteration, so they have their memories, but nothing else. Like, if they drink, the drunkenness doesn't seem to come with them. It's everything gets reset, except for the memory of the 2 minutes. Picture if Groundhog Day was 2 minutes instead of a day, and everyone in town was Bill Murray. That's River. So, Tom, what do you think the goals of the creators of River were?
I think the goals, or my reading of it, is that it is sort of a recognition of the sameness of people doing surface work. There's sort of a repetition or sameness to it. And I don't mean it as a put down or to say this is futile or something like that. The type of work I'm doing is futile because it just keeps repeating. But that's the nature of anybody who's done kind of service work, waiter, server, what have you. And I think that movie is capturing that kind of repetition, the acknowledgement of that repetition, and then the irony of that repetition suddenly becoming a thing that frees these people to act in ways they otherwise wouldn't, which is somewhat checked by the fact that they are determined that their ryokan remain a respectable place, that it still looks good in spite of the yes. In spite of the circumstances.
Yep.
But at one point our lead actress and the lead actor decide they're going to run off together and have a date, and they keep trying to plan how to run off and run away from everyone to have a date together, even though it's utterly futile. I mean, they're just going to go back in 2 minutes to where they were before, and they're trying to hide from everyone. And I think that's the idea. It's this sort of relaxing resort town where we're seeing most of it from the perspective, initially from the perspective of the people who run it. And I think the goal is to get a sense of that kind of what this job is repetition, 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 getting everything right over and over and over again. And suddenly that reality mirrors that job, and then the people become kind of free of that repetition by being trapped by a literal repetition. What do you think, KJ?
Yeah, I'm gonna disagree. Quite a bit, Tom. I don't know that it's a comment on the service industry or the hotel industry or the ryokan industry. I think the goals of the creator were to say, what in your life would you not want to move forward? And I think this is telling, and there's one of the major plot points is our lead, Mikoto, thinks she caused the time loop because she wished that time wouldn't move forward so she could be with the guy who is going to move to France for possibly 10 years. But shortly after that scene, they go to every single person and say, I really thought it was me because I wished that certain parts of my life didn't progress. I either liked where I am now or didn't want to approach a deadline or didn't want to deal with stuff that happened in the past that I now have to deal with as it's coming. I think their goal was to say, hey, if you could pause, what would that look like? What would that feel like? Would it be freeing? Would it be stressful? I think the creators wanted to say, if you only had your memories, if that was the only thing, just you, if you were the only thing that moved forward and nothing else moved forward, what would that, how would that work? And what kind of story could come out of that? I really think the movie was rooted in anything as tangible as a service work or something like that, but more spiritual might be too strong of a word, but what happens to the person if nothing else moves forward but the person?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And that makes a lot of sense, especially with the point in the movie, a sort of, not exactly the climax, a little before the climax, where, as you mentioned, everybody comes out and goes, yeah, I think it was me. I think I'm responsible for this. And we should give a little context here. Our main character, who is main female character, who's a server there, she begins the two loop by standing by a river, moving past the building, and wishing to the river god that time can stand still. And then it does. And so everybody, for a period, everybody thinks, oh, she's responsible if she can only just wish for time to go forward.
And audience, when Tom says they think she's responsible, they're like a Saturday morning cartoon, not quite attacking her, but like scuffling around her, like, catch her, if we can just catch her, something will happen, right?
It's, yeah.
This incredible, like, once they think it's her, they're like, she did it, and they're so mad about it. It's really funny to see everybody's reaction to that.
And yeah, and then she decides she's going to go on a date with this guy, so they have to run away to go on the date, and everybody's trying to chase her down.
She's trying to get her for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then everybody comes out and reveals, oh, actually, no, I really didn't want, I didn't want to finish my serial novel. There's a novelist who's writing a serial novel who is in seemingly writer's hell trying to finish this, and he is so happy when he gets stuck in the loop. He's the happiest guy there. I mean, at one point he commits suicide, and then when he comes back to life, he even seems overjoyed to still be going. He's like, yeah, I tried dying. I wanted to see what it was like.
He wanted to know what it was like. He didn't want to die. He just wanted to say, well, this is a unique opportunity to have this experience. Let me try it. I know we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves, but even the two business partners that are also friends, like, they were like, no, I wanted to pause because I'm hanging out with my friend and not worrying about the stress of work and the stress of family and the stress of life in general. I think the exact words are, I feel like a student again when I had no responsibility.
Yeah, and his company's in debt.
Well, right.
And one of them mentioned their company's in debt and they don't want to deal with that.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think your reading makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense to me that it's about, if we could all just pause. And the hotel, the guy who runs it, the man who seems to be in charge, it's a little unclear what his position is.
It's probably not the owner, right? The owner wouldn't act quite that way, but like a manager, a hotel manager,
yeah,
head manager maybe. Although the lady in the pink kimono seemed to have more authority than him, but.
That was a little confusing because she also was across the street. Does she own both buildings?
I couldn't tell because the cooks were across the street. So I didn't know if all the food came from
that building over there. Yeah. That was a little confusing. But, yeah. Well, anyway, with him, it's his daughter has a boyfriend
that he doesn't like.
He doesn't like, so he just wants the world to stop.
Stop.
And stop. Which is great. But yeah, I think that reading makes a lot of sense. And I think when they are able to come together and kind of admit, yeah, we all sort of wanted this. We all kind of wanted this break from reality. That's the point where they discover the actual truth behind why they're trapped in these 2 minutes, which is utterly absurd and silly, it turns out.
It's so wonderful.
It's so wonderful. And
yeah.
And their solution to it is just as silly.
Yes.
But because of the time frame, because of the, you know, the Majora's Mask time frame here, it actually is tense. Like, there's a bit of this certain tension in that last scene in order to solve the problem.
Are they going to pull this off? They need to heat up the thing. They need to pour the beer in for some reason and then shoot it.
The guy has to shoot it. And it's so far away. And they have to go up all of these stairs to get there.
But that was wonderful too, actually. The climax of the movie is them all together running up the stairs of the shrine. Like, it was this, they all work together to kind of do this. They all came together, which was...
They have to work together, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 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 And even the woman, the time traveler, is like, her boyfriend's on the moon, and that kind of spoke to the main conflict between the romantic leads, which is, Yeah, fun. I also like how the time they set that up though. The time traveler is there in the beginning. It was mm-hmm. like, oh, my vehicle broke down. Does anybody? And they're like, no, we don't know anything about it. And then she just goes away. And like, I wonder what that was all about. And then at the end, you get the solution.
Yep. Yeah, it would have been weird if they didn't do that, right? If she just showed right, up at
it,
the end.
Yep. Yeah, it would come off as a kind of Deus Ex Machina as yep. opposed to. It's not really Deus Ex Machina, but
something out of nowhere.
Yeah. At least they have that kind of setup at the beginning.
So how do we think they did with the money they had?
I think it looked great.
Right?
You know, yeah. I don't know what a bigger budget would have done. Probably not very much.
No. You couldn't have had a more beautiful place, right? Like it was gorgeous. The starting at the river every time was also really good because you had the sound of the river to let you know that you're starting a new loop, right? It was a rhythm that wasn't obnoxious, and it could be subtle or they could make it stronger depending on how they wanted you to feel on this loop. How'd you feel about the score?
I thought I liked the score, right?
Yeah, I liked the score a lot. That piano music, it was that intense dun 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 dun.
Yeah, I didn't note it very much. I didn't find anything particularly special about it, but I thought it served the film. And I think the scenery, one thing they do unique with the scenery, besides it being a attractive place, it looks like a place that really would be like a nice mountain escape. It looks for the American audience, is probably all of them. It kind of looks like Vermont almost, like a bed and breakfast in Vermont. I've not traveled to Japan, so I don't know.
Yeah, ryokans are really nice, really fancy. They're kind of an expensive place. The food is super high quality. You get kind of a small amount. And usually one of the big draws is the bath they have there.
But I mean, it's a beautiful setting. But what they also do is, and they have a brief explanation, is that every time you rewind, there's different levels of snow.
I'm pretty sure that was just they were in production. It snowed. They had a choice between having snow in their movie or not meeting the production schedule. So
they have an explanation in world. They have somebody come out and go, "Oh, the snow's this level. I wonder if this world is a good one." So there's a sort of idea of they're jumping worlds every time they repeat. But the effect is really cool. I really like the fact that sometimes it looks like it's spring. Sometimes there's a good deal of snow on the ground. The snow makes the place look beautiful.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
But it's a really nice, it's a nice little twist. And it might just be an accident, as you're saying, an accident of production. But it's one of those things that if you had more money, you'd fix.
Right.
And I don't think you'd want that fixed.
Nope.
No. Right, it ends up looking better, and the confusion makes it weird. It gives a little weirdness that's nice, that little twist that isn't fully explained. They have one line of dialogue that does not explain it very well. They just acknowledge it, basically, and you kind of can go from there.
The movie has a Twin Peaks feel to it. Not quite as David Lynch or as awkward as Twin Peaks might be. But there's an eeriness, like the snow, like the loop. There's things that they don't need to explain, and the characters just kind of go with it, and it kind of works.
Did you find it eerie in the way Lynch's stuff can be?
There is some eeriness to it, right? Some of the characters break down. Like, they're like, I can't take this anymore. Like, there is a dread that comes with, when is this going to end? So, yeah, I absolutely thought there was an eeriness. Now, it's overwhelmed with the silliness and the chaos, right? That one of the great thing about the 2 minutes is, most of the 2 minutes end with almost every character on the screen all doing some kind of an action.
Yeah.
Like a Scooby-Doo episode or something. Mm-hmm. Like.
And there's always a tension between the obligations of the workers and the absurd situation
it's
they're in.
It's so funny. The movie starts, and they very, very formally explain to each guest that they're in a time loop. Even though the guests have had just as much time to figure it out as the hotel workers, they very formally come in and explain, yep, we're in a time loop, we're doing everything we can, you can be calm. Like, they're all experienced this crazy thing, but for some reason, the hotel workers still feel obliged to try to calm down and have the guests have a good experience.
And they're really upset because they can't give them warm sake because they can't heat it in 2 minutes.
Lukewarm. Yeah.
Just disappointed. I think in terms of there's a moment where there's a sort of turn to seriousness. And I think the high silliness of it is the romantic part, where suddenly the male lead and the female lead, who happen to be fairly close together when the time loop starts, he's on a balcony, she's beneath the balcony, and they decide to run away, and everybody thinks she's responsible for this and she can fix it. She's like, I'm not going to fix it. I'm going to run away for 2 minutes with this guy. Let's go south. Oh no, they caught us there. Let's go north. Okay, let's steal a car and drive.
See how far we can get. Let's watch a movie.
But it's only 2 minutes. I'll just fast forward it next time.
Right. Next.
Like, there she is. And so I think that's the high silly point. That gets stopped with the suicide.
Right.
And the hunter commits suicide.
It was kind of brutal.
Like, it's brutal, and it's not abusive, I don't think, because you don't see it. You just hear it.
Yep.
But it kind of goes, okay, now that's the button that ends this beat or this collection of beats. We're now going to move on to something else. And it doesn't wallow in it. It's not really like, and now we're in the serious mode of the blah, 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 blah. You know, it's just a moment of like, oh, okay, we have to get our heads back on. You know, this kind of fun time is over. So yeah, I don't know if I found it Lynchian.
That's why I mean it's almost Twin Peaks without the Lynchian part. It was still eerie. Maybe Majora's Mask's a better comparison. The way Majora's Mask feels as you're playing through that, you kind of get to know all the townspeople, and in that game they're all on a routine, so you know exactly what they're gonna do because it's a 3-day loop in Majora's Mask, where you're the only character, you're the Bill Murray that knows this loop's going on. But even here, a lot of the characters, like the guy in the bath, has to run out of the bath if he wants to interact with everybody else. Like, everybody has to do certain things and come from certain directions. So some things are very predictable, but then they're a little off every time. So that's kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose I never felt I think what David Lynch does so well is he combines horror and comedy in order to kind of show the connection between the high and the low, between the dark and the light, right? You get something like Blue Velvet. It's about this kind of pristine middle-class town, which has all these very nice, good values, also has this kind of dark side to it. And neither side dominates. It's not like secretly middle-class America, you know, rural America is this evil, blah, 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 blah. These are the two consenting sides of a society. I don't really get that here. I think the turn to seriousness with the suicide of the hunter is what is the cold water that gets them to go at the problem again. To go, okay, we've joked around enough. It's time to say, pray to the water god and turn off the infinite 2 minutes.
And they all stand around and cheer when she does it. I don't know.
Photograph her.
Like, oh yeah, this is when the 2 minutes ended. I don't know, Todd. Just the counter to that is it starts pretty silly where the workers are explaining the time loop over and over again to all the different guests so that the audience understand it. Then they try to solve it up in the meeting up in the on the other side of the street. And it becomes kind of tense and serious at that point. And then it becomes silly again when the bath guy gets out. And then when the two coworkers start fighting, right, things get pretty negative. People get pretty stressed. So you're saying David Lynch does kind of a dark and a light. I think this movie does that a little bit, showing you the positives of pausing parts of your life and the negatives of not being able to progress with your life.
But yeah, it's a sort of, I mean, this we see with Groundhog Day, right? Which is Bill Murray's first thing he does when he realizes there's no consequences to his actions is to celebrate. And that's kind of what these people do too. Infinite rice. We can, right. Because they're eating rice. They eat infinite rice. Infinite alcohol. And they're like, well, can we get drunk? No. No. And so there's this kind of there's this kind of fun. And the dating is the height of that, of Yes, no consequences. We could just keep going on dates. You don't have to go to France, and I don't have to serve these people anymore. But there is this point where the lack of consequences is always, and it's what they do in Groundhog Day, it's the lack of consequences is hell itself, right? That's what's punishing. And this movie isn't punishing in the way, in any way. Groundhog Day really isn't either, even though it's more. I mean, Bill Murray gets radically depressed, his character, I should say, gets radically depressed and attempts suicide. So that movie, it doesn't have that kind of emotional register in it, but it's still working with the same paradigm of, you know, eventually a lack of consequences is a kind of living hell, right? You want something to press against you and guide you. And the suicide of the hunter, I think, is the point where everybody goes, oh, we need to fix this. Oh, wait, we can't. Why is this happening? Well, we were all afraid of consequences. We're all afraid of moving forward with our life and having to deal with the most difficult parts of it. We want that back now. Can we have that back now?
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, that's when they meet the time traveling lady whose machine froze and its safety feature said 2 minute loop.
To not cause a paradox. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once this movie starts wrapping up, it wraps up. It's like, all right, let's go, which was fine. Do you think a budget would have helped?
No, right? Because you would have had.
Yeah.
You would have done things like corrected the snow.
Mm-hmm. You would have corrected the snow. You might have tried to get bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you might have tried an effect or something, which wouldn't have helped.
Yeah, special effects, yep. The cast is pretty big. I don't think it needed more cast.
No.
And the zany cast was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think.
Right?
I don't think it would have...
I think it was spot on.
Done much.
So before we get to deciding it's on our recommend list, Tom. So this is the second movie we've done by Mr. Yamaguchi. The first one was Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes, where they had two webcams that could see, one saw 2 minutes in the future, one saw 2 minutes in the past, depending on how you want to think about them. This movie was a 2 minute time loop. So Yamaguchi's, at least two of his movies, are based on 2 minutes. Any other ideas for a movie that deals with exactly 2 minutes? And I'm putting you on the spot, Tom. So,
oh, Lord, a movie that deals with exactly, exactly 2 minutes. I want it to be something with like a piece of writing, like somebody's trying to write a book, and every 2 minutes they get a, you know, another page or another 2 minutes of writing in the book, and then those whatever chapters or those pages in the book sort of reflect a circumstance or a diary. Every 2 minutes you get like a diary page of the next day or something like that, and so that will then somehow inform what's going to happen. Like, you get a future diary page every 2 minutes.
Early edition, but every 2 minutes instead of the day before.
Yeah, that's somewhat lame. I was also thinking something with cooking, because at least, maybe every 2 minutes, you set the microwave, you close the microwave door, and every 2 minutes it dings and something else comes out of it. Different food, different things like that, and they have to figure out what's going on.
And like, everybody starts gathering around, like, "Oh, what's gonna come out of the next 2 minutes?" And
yeah,
all this weird stuff, and eventually, it's like not bad stuff, but like things that are like kind of dangerous. And they're like, "Oh, what's the microwave doing?"
Imagine there's like a little nuclear reactor that comes out of it, and then they have to hide the nuclear reactor. We have a nuclear reactor. What do we do with this?
No, is it
radioactive? Yeah, that might be fun. The 2 minute microwave.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe a movie where somebody only gets to experience 2 minutes a day or 2 minutes a year. So for 2 minutes, you establish here's a character. And then for 2 minutes, they get to be perceptive and get everything in. But the rest of the day, it's something else that's controlling their body. But you're getting it from their perspective of 2 minutes a day, or maybe 2 minutes a year, although that would be really sad, right? Like, the guy's going to miss his whole life. But some of his friends know what's happening, and they're waiting for those 2 minutes, whatever time of the the day it is. So then you kind of tell a story that way, and he's trying to get back to being himself all the time instead of just the,
mm-hmm.
the 2 minutes. Yeah,
that would be good, like 2 minutes a day. And so you could see, mm-hmm. well, if you have a 60-minute movie, right, then it's a month.
It's a month. That might not
so
be
it's about
enough.
Two months. Yeah. You could either do it that way or have it longer, or you have it 2 minutes an hour. And so that then you have what? That would be a pretty short movie, right? Because it'd be 48.
It'd be 2 days.
It'd be 48 minutes. Because you're getting 2 minutes.
In one day. So I guess you'd have to do like 2 days, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you'd have to have a reason why it only lasts. I guess they would figure out the problem by that. You know, that would be the thing. In 2 days, they'd figure out the problem. Yeah, that would be fun. You could do that, certainly.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, hopefully there's more 2 minute ideas. Yeah. So, what do you think, Tom? Does this make the list?
I think it does. I think this checks our boxes, right? It's low budget enough. It is using the constraints of budget to do weird and fun things. It's well spirited. It has a little, you know, a little bit of intelligence to it, but it's not a dissertation. I think it works. What do you think?
I want to say yes, and I think I'm going to say yes, but I'm nervous that we're going to have two movies from the same director. That's fine, right? That's okay. We're not overcrowding our list with Yamaguchi movies, right? Like we're okay with.
I think we're allowed to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's one film a director. Right?
Okay. Because mm-hmm. otherwise, why would we bring?
Exactly.
Kind of, right, and it doesn't. So yeah. So it's a yes from me, a hard yes from me. Mm-hmm. It does beg the question. Do you recommend River or Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes? Which one's higher on the list?
I liked this more than Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. I think Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes is fun, and it's zany. It's just, I think we are focusing on this lead actress in this movie, who I really love her face. I love looking at it. I love this kind of the way she expressed surprise and so on and so forth. Her name is...
Yeah, that's Riko Fujitani.
But I just found the lead actors. I like the lead actors in Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes, but this woman really has a sort of captivating presence, and I liked spending the time with her, even though a lot of the actors in this are also in Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes.
Well, and that was, right, so the guy that was the turtle in... not Beyond the... I'm thinking of Summertime Machine Blues. There's also a few overlap between Summertime Machine Blues and... The guy that played the turtle, or the guy that played the guy that became the turtle in the Summertime Machine Blues, mm-hmm. Is the hotel manager in this.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of found those movies, I don't say at the exact same time in my life, but it was hard to see him grow up 20 years mm-hmm. in a month for me. Like, I'm like, oh, no, he's supposed to be that young guy from Summertime Machine
yeah.
Blues.
That's true. And he's also in Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. He's one of the Time Paradox cops.
Yeah. You're right. It's him and Mushroom from Summertime Machine Blues. Yeah.
Which I was wondering, is this the same world? Because
I think the
time cops are also the time paradox police or whatnot. That sort of is the time authority is also the responsible for the problem in this as well.
Yep. I do think that's what that suggested, that these were mm-hmm. the same. This is the 2 minute cinematic universe.
Something like that, yeah. Which I like a lot more than the other cinematic universes. The idea is weirder.
It's official. River has made the list, so please, Junta Yamaguchi, keep making movies, and keep making movies based on 2 minutes. I think this is absolutely wonderful. Audience, let us know what you think. Did you like Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes or River better? What did you like? Let us know on social media at Talking Studios.
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, if you haven't already, please like this video, subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is. And Adapt It, where we explore adaptations in various forms. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201-467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Keep Making Movies, wherever fine podcasts are found.
Join us next time when we discuss Joel Haver's Island from 2019. Stay tuned for our first impressions of Joel Haver's Island. The movie's name is Island. There's a few movies called Island, so this is the one made by Joel Haver from 2019. Next week, we'll be discussing Island. Tom, how was your watch?
My watch was good, I guess. I did not know of this movie or this director, and I think it might be the most low-budget film we've done here, or maybe the most low-budget feature-length film that I've ever seen. It is, I would say, hard to get through at first. And the movie is divided clearly into two chapters, two broad sections that have very different styles and are doing different things, but are complementing each other. Getting through the first section is a little hard. Seeing it with its complement makes me understand what he's trying to do with the movie, and I get it for the most part. But it brings up the question for me, which is, if you're going to resort to non-traditional storytelling, what are you getting out of that? Traditional storytelling has evolved for a reason. It does its job very, very well. If you want to forego traditional storytelling, great. And many, many fine artists do that. But there has to be a sort of payoff that's in excess of just telling a story. There has to be a reason why you're dragging us through 30 minutes of him effectively playing in his living room with puppets and a photocopier for some reason. And that ends up becoming like the big question I want to think about or bring next week when we discuss this movie is, not only what is he trying to do, but is the style in which he's approaching it really justified? How about you, KJ? What do you think?
Well, you know, I first saw Joel Haver's The Island. It was either on Vimeo, maybe YouTube, kind of back when it first came out. I just stumbled across it. And I like you had said, Tom, it's kind of broken into two parts. And the first part, I really liked the way he used the projector. Well, we'll get into it next week. But I really did like that. But I was pretty confused on my first watch. I was like, huh. But on my second watch, the more recent one for this show, I do, like you were saying, I think the two parts complemented each other, and I think they work better together. So audience, I recommend watching the film and, you know, consider the two parts and try to consider how they relate to each other. Joel Haver's The Island is not on any streamers at the time of this recording.
Wow, Talking Studios,